Investing Simplified is brought to you by Chuck Price, President and Wealth Manager of Price Financial Group, Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm. Individual situations will vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Chuck can be contacted by visiting www.pfgwm.com. You can email Chuck a question at askchuck@pfgwm.com, or you can call him right now at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Chuck Price.
We do Investing Simplified.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you're wide awake this morning. We're going to have a very lively show. My name is Chuck Price. It's the longest-running live financial show in the Great Northwest. And also, some people are hearing us on the web at freedom970.com. In studio with me is Carl Jepson with the Warren Island Law Firm.
Good morning, Chuck.
Morning, Carl. And Kevin Stege with Baker Coastal CPA Firm.
Good morning, gentlemen.
And online is the esteemed author, co-editor with Harry Dent of Economy and Markets, a free newsletter that you can sign on.
He'll be calling in about 5 minutes, it looks like.
Oh, okay. Yep. Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you. He's going to be online with us. And this is your opportunity. If you want to call and ask a question, you can pick up the phone and give us a call at 503-417-7626 or 503-417-7626 and toll-free 800-990-0750. That's 1-800-990-0750. And I'm kind of anxious to have Rodney on today. I think there's a lot of economic things going on that we can talk about.
You know, I was going to say, this is while we wait for him to get on, this is a great chance for people to give him a call and ask their questions. I mean, to talk with a national economist, I think, you know, this is ace up your sleeve. So I understand Rodney.
Rodney's on the line. Rodney, are you there?
Yes, I am, Chuck. Good morning.
We were just giving you a big buildup. And telling everybody how terrific you were and how great of a talk you were going to give us this morning. And are you getting excited to head up here to the beautiful Northwest in September?
You know, I am. It's I live in Florida, of course, South Florida, and it's already hot here. We already have the summer weather. At night, it gets down to 76 or 77 degrees, but it's still 90% humidity. So I'm anxious to be up there, certainly.
Well, and I'm talking about the Irrational Summit that's going to be in Vancouver, B.C., yep. September 10th to the 12th, and you've got a boatload of great speakers coming.
We do. We've got one that's a little outside the box, P.J. O'Rourke, for those who are literary fans and fans of satire. I mean, he's just a great writer, of course, a reporter from the Nixon era, but has watched Washington and politics change over 40 years, and it's just a great commentary on what's going on in American life. And so he's the keynote, and we're going to welcome back David Stockman, who was, of course, in the Reagan administration as the budget director. He was at our last conference, and it just went exceptionally well. And so we're thrilled to have him back also.
Well, I just can't believe that you and Harry would do anything outside the box.
Well, I was looking for something interesting, and to bring, you know, 10 people to a conference that agree with you on everything and say the same thing, well, I'm not interested, so I can't imagine anybody else is. And so we try to bring differing opinions, and people have a pretty smart take on life.
Well, you know, one of the things I've been promoting about your economic summit, and I tell people, listen, if you want to go up there, and you want to hear one of the great things about Harry's Irrational Summits that you guys put on, you always have people with different opposing views. And it is very educational to hear both sides of a story. And people who want to just bury their head in the sand and say there's only one way, well, sometimes hearing both sides, you can kind of make an intelligent decision of yourself and maybe be in the middle of those two. But that's one of the things I admire about your guys' summit that you put on, why I love going, is because I get to hear different points of view.
Well, thank you. And that's what we're trying to do, because we learn things from people that you know, have an opposing view from us. They have a different take on things. We're always looking for smart opinions, no matter where they fall. because we adjust our research. And who wouldn't? You know, you hear smart new ideas or ways of looking at things, and of course you should take it into consideration because we're all trying to do the same thing, which is plan for our financial future to the best of our ability. I mean, that's the name of the game.
Well,
and we should all take as much information as we can.
Yeah, there's no question this is not your father's or grandfather's economy.
No.
Yeah, I mean, things have changed, and things are continuing to change and evolve, not only in the United States, but in the world. And I noticed you guys did some articles this past week here on the actual debt in the world.
And it is larger than anybody would imagine, right? I mean, it's trillions untold. And so you add it up, and it's just so many numbers that start with a T that it just makes your head spin. I don't know how you really get your arms around something that's a trillion large, and to say that we owe trillions and trillions that can never be repaid. So something will have to adjust. There's no question there will be an adjustment around the world of how much debt is being carried. And so when you have an adjustment, it means somebody's going to take a hit. Maybe the person who owes it is going to pay a little more, but probably the person it's owed to is going to get a little less or a lot less. And that's where the fight starts.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's, I've heard more and more people say now, kind of what Harry mentioned to us last month when he was on the air, is that if, you know, in 2008, if we would have just bit the bullet, not bailed everybody out, reloaded the economy in essence, and said, okay, if you're bankrupt, you're bankrupt. We're not bailing you out. Too bad. Let's start reducing debts and let's start building an economy. We would be in a roaring bull market right now.
Yeah, it's entirely possible. I mean, nobody knows what would have happened if we would have done it differently, but we can look at what we have done over the last 7 years, and we should all ask ourselves, is this what we thought the outcome would be? When we had our representatives agree to an $800 billion bailout that basically gave a free pass to many people that were involved in the downturn and bailed out companies that were bankrupt in everything but, you know, activity, because we gave them free loans and then the world knew that they had the backstop of the U.S. government. Did we expect from that we would be 7 years later with unemployment low but wages not growing, with millions more people not participating in the workforce, with millions of people not being back to where they were before the downturn in terms of the assets that they have, with still millions of people underwater on their loans that we just don't talk about anymore? Do we think that was going to be the case for all the firepower we put toward it? And that didn't even start to talk about the $4 trillion printed from the Federal Reserve. And so I don't think anyone believed that if we put so much into it that the outcome would be so muted. And yet here we are. And so that begs the question of, look, if you just let them go and let them restart, rebuild, you know, with the assets, like General Motors, if they would have gone truly bankrupt and you didn't bail them out, let it flush out, let other investors come in, buy up the assets and rebuild again, you would have been so much better off.
Well, you know, I know one way the federal government has really cut their expenses down, and that is on Medicare, because I get more and more clients who tell me, who are on Medicare, the convoluted change that's happened in Medicare the last couple of years, and I don't want to just totally blame it on Obamacare, but I think I got to blame it on Obamacare because they cut money for Medicare. And I have a lot of clients now who are just simply saying, "The heck with, you know, the heck with this. I'm just going to buy the services myself." And if they have the money, that's great. If they don't have the money, that's a different story. But you know, our clients are buying their services because they've made it so hard to work with. And I've heard so much frustration. I've never heard as much before. But a lot of people are saying, you know, I guess this is how the government saves money. They pass it to the seniors who's paid it for the last 50 years to them, and they're paying them back by making their Medicare program suck worse than it did before.
And I don't know that it's specifically Obamacare that brought this on in particular. I'm certain a lot of the new regulations are. But the problem has been growing since Medicare was, you know, a wee 5 years old back in 1970, and they did the first comprehensive review and found that it was tens of billions of dollars underwater and was projected to be hundreds of billions and now trillions of dollars underwater. Everyone knew it wouldn't work. Now, the problem wasn't on the doorstep in 1970, but everybody could see it. Now it's on our doorstep, Now it is running in the deficit every year, and people are looking around and going, well, what do we do? And instead of stripping away all of the regulation and all of the layers of gunk that gets put on top to see what the problem is at the bottom, that we're providing more services than we can actually pay for a group of people, we're putting more and more restrictions on it, which basically does nothing but fuel the bureaucracy, which makes no sense because then we're wasting more money on it.
Yeah, I just can't believe we would have a system like that in America.
I mean, it kind of
relates to social insecurity, doesn't it?
It does, and it's all the same thing. No one wants to be the person to stand up and say, this won't work. Here's the basics. We cannot provide all the services at this rate for the group of people that have paid into it. Not that they're not deserving of it. That's not it at all. But they've paid into it. We just can't afford it. So what do we do with that basic equation? Can't afford it. Here are the services. Here are the people. What among those three do you cut out? And no one wants to stand up and deal with it.
Well, you know, there's a fundamental principle of the Congress that is that there's no problem too great that can't be cured by more regulation.
Yeah,
spoken like a true attorney.
Yeah. Howard, who wrote the book The Death of Common Sense in 1994. And it's just gotten worse since then. And it's a common ideal that in living your daily life, you do break the law. You may not know how, but all of us break the law somewhere along the way in our daily life. But all the regulations aren't necessarily enforced until, of course, they choose to enforce them. And that's where the problem is. And so I'd love to see somebody who came along and said, you know, if elected, my job would be to reduce regulations, just start stripping them out and actually narrow the field of what we have to comply with instead of making it worse all the time.
Well, Rodney, we're going to take just a quick break for a break here because we're trying to syndicate our show and we need to take these breaks on time so we can put it out the other networks. So we're going to just put you on hold here for a couple of minutes. We'll be right back.
Sounds good.
Thanks.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do investing simplified. We do investing simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do investing simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepson, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepson.
Well, we're not going to come back with Carl Jepson at this break. We're going to still stay on the line with Rodney Johnson. Rodney, are you still hanging in there with us?
Yep, I'm still here, Chuck.
Good. Okay. Well, Rodney, if you were looking at the economy and saying what you think is going to happen, Harry sent out a great article to all the members this past week, and he showed a graph about the markets and about how we're at that point where we're coming very, very close to maybe a market correction.
He did, and he's looking at some past cycles and what has happened from the lows to the highs in previous years. And the basic point is that, you know, we're extended. It's been 6 years. We've had a very long bull run that's longer than most bull runs. There was one, of course, in the 90s that was very long as well. But when you've extended this far, you start paying more attention to what are the possible tops. And everyone wants to know what's the trigger, what's going to cause the next downturn. And no one knows what's going to cause it. But the outcome will be, we've grown so far, we have to pull back, because now we're at very high valuations on equities, and yet companies are telling us that their earnings aren't growing that fast. Well, if your valuations are high but your earnings aren't growing as fast as they were, you're actually decelerating, then naturally you shouldn't have those high valuations anymore. And so we're trying to make sure that we're giving people a look as to where potential tops are, and two or three things are coming together at the same time. One is that we do have the length of time of the last run in the bull market is about the same as we have now in this one. And so the calendar is telling us that it's time. We do have the extreme valuation is telling us it's time. The time of year coming into the difficult summer months is also telling us it's time. And so there's just several things pointing to this. And the Federal Reserve, which was easing monetary policy for so long with printing hundreds of billions and then trillions of dollars, is now stopped printing, which is tightening. If you've been printing and then you stop, that is a tightening monetary act. And they are estimating when they're going to raise interest rates. Now, Harry doesn't believe it's going to be till the fall. I think there's still a slight possibility it could be next month. But the point is, they're still talking about it. That as well is a negative sign for the markets. And so you're looking at all of these things and saying, well, what's the thing that's pointing to the markets continuing to rise? And then you hear crickets, because there aren't many things that say this market should continue to go up from here. And that's why we want people to be very cautious.
Well, you know, I just take a look around at the amount of building office space that's available. I mean, you just virtually can't drive down the road and not see a for lease or a for rent sign on office space. You see strip malls that are half full. You know that less people are working today than were working, you know. Well, there's less people working in 37 years. We're at the low point in 37 years. And you know that incomes have not grown in the last 6 or 7 years. So that in itself tells anybody with any common sense, hey, things aren't going the way they should be going.
Exactly. This expansion isn't, it doesn't have the hallmarks of a classic recovery where people are more in the risk-taking mode. People are adding new employees quickly because they want to match the business that they have. And I'll tell you, one thing that people aren't paying as close attention to as I think we might is capital investment. Companies aren't saying, look, I've made a pot of money in my earnings. I'm going to plow it back into my company so that I can grow my company bigger to serve more clients down the road. Instead, you have large companies saying, I've made a bucket of earnings. I'm going to buy back my own stock, which is basically an admission that you have no better thing to do with your money than to return it to shareholders by buying back your stock. I mean, it's just it's an odd way to shrink the outstanding value of your company when you have the opportunity to instead invest in your business, and you're just saying, nope, not going to do it.
Yeah, what happened to growth and expansion?
Yeah, it's just it's a strange thing, and it does lead to, if a company has growing revenue and earnings, I mean, even slightly positive, as they shrink the number of shares outstanding, it increases the value of the other shares. And so it works in terms of making the shareholders, the shares rise, the price of the shares rise, the ones that remain outstanding, but it doesn't do anything to set up the company for further growth down the road. There's no future planning in that.
Well, Rodney, it's easy for us to always just look nationally here. Do you see anything on the global scale that could tip us toward that direction? You know, China is always kind of a sore spot. Is that what's happening over there?
Well, the Chinese are very interesting. They're struggling with their debt. And again, you know, as Harry pointed out earlier this week, debt is a global problem. It's not a national problem. And they increased their debt outstanding dramatically since the downturn. I mean, by trillions of dollars. Again, another number with a T that's hard to get your arms around. And the way they did it was by having local governments borrow money to build things because it put people to work and it looks like GDP growth. And it was. I mean, when you hire a bunch of construction workers to put up buildings, it certainly puts money into the economy. The problem is that the debt is owed by the local governments, and their source of income is drying up. Local governments in China made money by basically taking land from rural farmers and then selling it to developers at a much inflated price. Well, the property bubble has starting to show cracks in China and starting to roll over. They've actually contracted over the last year in prices. And so developers aren't just running out to do that. So the local governments don't have the income to pay off the debt that they owe. And the national government is trying to help them through a series of refinancing and other ways to make that more manageable. So far, it's not really working. And so we've pointed to the Chinese debt problem for some time and said, look, the expansion and growth they've had is, of course, real in terms of people coming to the city and urbanizing and growing. But there's a supercharger to it of this borrowed money at the local level to build that has to create a bubble, given the way they've done it. And that's where we are. And so that's actually one of the biggest triggers we see is if they have a hard landing in China as they deal with this debt bubble and property bubble. And it looks like it's starting to unfold in front of our eyes.
You know, I got to come back. I remember less than a year ago, everybody was worried that California was going to go bankrupt. The federal government was going to have to bail them out. What's happened on that? I mean, did they just get a magic pill and get bailed out, or did something happen we didn't know about?
Actually, something happened that we all knew about, and what they did was they raised taxes. And people aren't – I don't know why. You know, people kind of look at this and say, well, how did that work? They tax more than 50% at the highest rate. And so if you live in California, you have the and you're earning decent amount of money, you're in the top tax bracket, you have the joy of sending more money to government entities than you put in your own bank account. And that was supposed to be a temporary thing, which, of course, was not temporary in any way, or shape, or form. And yet here we are. And so in California, they've had a bit of a windfall as companies go public. And then you have these newly minted millionaires and billionaires who are paying capital gains taxes as they cash out on some of it. But they just out and out raise taxes on anybody with assets. And that's part of the deal where we're telling people, look, this doesn't really look like what we've done before, because the way governments have basically refilled their coffers was with tax hikes from 2009, 10, and 11. And it works. It just leaves your constituents with less to do what they want to do and to, you know, plan for their own future.
Well, Hollywood should love that. They could help the country.
Hollywood holds a special place in my heart because, you know, there's a lot of causes that get espoused from people involved in Hollywood. Not all, but people involved. And yet they go around the country and demand tax breaks for filming in your city. It's like, wait a second. If you're supposed to be such a do-gooder and we're all supposed to, you know, carry our weight and pay our burden, then why do you demand money back when you want to film in North Carolina or, you know, in Chicago or even, you know, up in Seattle? I don't understand that.
Well, it's probably so that you could take your dog to Australia without getting the right shots.
Well, you know, that's very true. We have the same thing here in Portland. They do a lot of filming. There's Grimm and a couple other shows are filmed here in Portland. And I know we have some friends who are in that business, and that's why they live in Vancouver, B.C. We're going to see them when we come up to the Irrational Summit. And they're up there because they can film in Vancouver, B.C., at a much more reasonable price than they can in California.
Right, and film at a reasonable price. Typically that means, you know, we're getting all sorts of rebates to our filming company.
That's exactly correct, and they make no bones about it. That's why they live there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, wait a second, that means the rest of us are paying for the benefit of you being here to make money. How is that good for me?
Well, it's being smart enough to take advantage of it, I guess, or having the ability to go there and work.
Right, and that's the other part of it. You know, it's up to all of us, you know, as the Supreme Court found many years ago, it's up to all of us to find as many of the breaks as we can. It is not an immoral thing for us to search out tax breaks. It's what we're supposed to do.
Well, it's one of the things Carl and I talk about when we do our estate planning seminars and talk about the fact that it's your legal right to take advantage of every tax law. It's just not your legal right to do faulty taxes and break the law, then you go to jail.
Exactly. And tax avoidance is okay. Tax evasion, that's what lands you behind bars.
Yep. That's called the Gray Bar Hotel. Well, listen, Kevin and Carl, do you got a question here to Rodney? Or
no, I'm just relying on Kevin to keep me out of the Gray Bar Hotel.
Kevin's our CPA, so he better. Yeah, he's got to make sure that we're right with the tax man. I do want to point out, Rodney, your book, that you had come out this, it just went off my site there. I got your site online, but it changes too often. You know, I'm trying to
keep
Harry
it fresh.
Because Harry's got his book, The Demographic Cliff, and we're offering free copies of that to anybody that comes in that listens to the show and wants a copy of it, as long as copies last. And I also want to talk about your book.
Irrational Economics.
Yep.
And it's funny that you mentioned that. It's a collection of articles I've written over a course of a year or two on these different topics and kind of my take on them. But in the New York Times last Sunday, on the front page of the business section, it was a story about irrelevance matters. And it was a professor of economics talking about his students who are irrational when they're making choices about how things are graded. And his point was, we do that all the time in life. And yet the study of economics assumes that everyone is exactly rational when they're faced with a choice, which, of course, we know is not true, because since interest rates are zero, none of us should have money in a deposit account because we don't earn anything. So we should have immediately wiped out those accounts and gone and spent the money, which nobody does. And so the point is, we are irrational, and we have to look at the choices people make as living, breathing consumers instead of some theory in a textbook to see what's going to happen next.
That sounds like an article you could have wrote.
I thought the same thing. I thought this guy ripped me off, but no.
Well, yeah, I think that's a great point, Rodney. I've always, I sometimes get clients coming in who want a budget laid out for them or help with their budgeting and stuff, and I usually start those engagements off by saying, you know, if everybody spent money like I did, the economy would collapse and would have to rebuild itself, because the standard way of spending money and running up credit card debt and all, and just the way we do stuff, is crazy, in my opinion, and it's not financially sound. A lot of decisions and just the cycle of the American economy just isn't really that healthy.
Well, and it breeds.
No, it
it
isn't. But we've grown used to it, and that's the problem. The reset phase would be very, very painful.
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you think that's actually going to happen in the economy, that we'll have a reset?
I do, but I don't think it's going to happen. It doesn't happen in one step. It's not that everything falls to zero and, you know, gnashing your teeth and tearing a cloth and all that. What happens is it's kind of a slow roll, and we're in it. This past week, the Federal Reserve of New York, which does a study of consumer debt, came out with their latest quarterly report and said in the first quarter, mortgage debt was up by $6 billion. Well, $6 billion on an $8 trillion mortgage balance is nothing. people just aren't doing it. And that's the net, you know, of people who are getting mortgages and people who are paying them down. Credit card debt was down by $20 billion for the quarter, down by $20 billion. Auto loans were up a little bit. Student loans were up another, I think, roughly $100 billion. But it's up to $1.9 trillion now. And so you look at how we're taking on debt, and it's being curbed. And so you're not seeing that growth in debt like we had 10 years ago. And at the same time, this big benefit or dividend we were supposed to get from gasoline being cheaper, so everybody's going to take the money and run out and spend it, they didn't do it. What they did, in large part, was put the money in their pocket or pay down debt, which is what we've been talking about for a long time. And so it's not that it forces us to, you know, drive down dramatically and wash everything out and it's crazy. It's that we don't get the growth people expect because consumers are making better financial choices with their money, some by necessity and some by choice.
Well, listen, Rodney, we appreciate your time. Look forward to talking to you either next month or the month after, and definitely I'll be seeing you in September. We appreciate you taking this time on your Saturday morning with us.
Well, thank you both, and I look forward to seeing you in the fall.
Great. See you then. Thank you very much. Going to take a quick break. Come right back with Carl's comments. You're listening to Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, Wealth Management.
How often do you have a checkup? Annually? Only when you're not feeling your best? Or are you one who waits until there is an emergency condition? High blood pressure, rapid pulse, or sleepless nights could be the result of your investment portfolio or no estate plan. But there is a specialist ready to offer you a checkup on your financial health.
Hey, Gene, Dr. Price. Hey, Gene, Dr. Price.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor and author of Investing Simplified, is offering you a free financial checkup. Whether you're asking for a second opinion, a complete financial physical, or investment stress test, Chuck Price, the financial doctor, can help diagnose your money ailments and prescribe a prudent path towards healthy investments and peace of mind. Call 503-253-3000 to schedule your financial checkup or on the web at pfgwm.com. That's pfgwm.com. You'll feel better.
The time to stop working is approaching, or maybe it's already arrived. CDs and money markets are paying only fractions of a point. How secure do you feel about retiring right now? Call Chuck Price. He's located right here in Portland, and he can show you how to increase your Social Security up to 67% using specific program rules and the file and suspend strategy. Chuck specializes in working with people who are either retired or are close to retiring, and he focuses on how to never run out of money during retirement. Do this today. Schedule a free 20-minute retirement plan phone consultation or schedule an appointment with Chuck himself. Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Chuck Price at Price Financial Group Wealth Management. On the web at pfgwm.com.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We are located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
Got a legal question? Coming up is Carl Jepsen, estate planning attorney and partner of the Warren Allen Law Firm, with Carl's comments. You can call Carl at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Here's Carl Jepsen.
All right, send lawyers, guns, and money.
Well, welcome back to Investing Simplified. This is Carl Jepsen. And it is time for Carl's comments. But first, before we do that, I'd like to... I understand we had a question last week when I was out of town. And that question had to do with what we call the law of intestate succession. And Chuck, would you refresh me as to what this fact situation was there?
Yeah, but I believe the lady called in. Her brother had passed away, and there were siblings, and there was a mom and dad. And she wanted to know how that would be probably taken care of, because they got to go through probate. How the asses, he had no will,
okay,
no
so,
kids.
So the father had no wife, and he had kids. No, wait, the father had brothers and sisters and no kids.
Correct.
And his parents were still alive.
Correct.
Goes to the parents.
Oh, well, there you go. And now if there was no parents, it would be divided.
Then it would go to the brothers and sisters.
Okay, well, that makes it easy.
And, you know, it gets really weird if you start splitting it up into... say, for example, that he had children by prior marriage, and then, you know, then it gets really confusing. So,
yeah, that makes sense.
How far away have you had to track relatives down?
I got to tell you, we had a case some years ago. It's the most difficult probate case I've ever been involved in because of the number of heirs. This fellow had a substantial estate of maybe, I don't know, a couple of $1 million, which back in those days was a big estate. And he had, not only did he have most of his assets in like 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 different brokerages, he had some real estate too and some other stuff, but he didn't have a wife, he didn't have children, he had no brothers and sisters, his parents and grandparents were dead, but there were 32 different cousins twice removed and, you know, all over the place. All over the place these people were, mostly throughout the Northwest, but not entirely. We hired a private investigator and did all sorts of research to find these people. I had a chart on my wall that looked like, you know, looked like NASA could have put this thing together. It looked like a flow chart for getting the doggone space shuttle up the... And we went over that over and over and over again. It was really hard to figure out. We had things like, you know, the division of assets came down to, you know, 7/32nds and things like that.
Wow.
It was like, oh my gosh. Anyway, so we finally did find all these people. One of whom was located in Gold Beach, Oregon, and he lived in a mobile home park. He didn't have a phone, so the investigator had to drag him out to the Highway 101 to the payphone to talk to me on the phone. And if for those of you who are this old, there used to be a program called The Millionaire, and they used to give $1 million just sort of out of the goodness of his heart to some unsuspecting lucky person. And they always had this scene where they were telling him that they're getting the money. And so I got to, you know, talk to this guy and say, hey, you're getting $30,000.
Wasn't a million, but it was still pretty good.
And it was like from some relative that he didn't even know he had. So it was kind of cool. But that just, in fact, this all plays in very, very well with my comments today, because what I have here, the comment is 5 reasons you should get your affairs in order today, or now, or soon, or yesterday. And here's the reason. Procrastination may be the worst enemy to estate planning. And we know that, and you probably know that as well. So I just want to give you, you know, here are some reasons you should get your affairs in order right now. Number one, you can decide who will manage your financial affairs and make your decisions for you if you become incapacitated. But if you don't, someone else will. The court will do it, and they'll point someone to do it for you. Number two, you can decide in advance who will get your property when you die, but if you don't, the court will do it for you. You can nominate a guardian and conservator to take care of you in the event that you become incapacitated, but if you don't, the court will appoint one for you. And
I sense a theme here, Carl.
Yeah, there is. I'm trying to. Yeah, this is the theme. Well, and the problem with that is, you know, if you get a guardian and conservator, you lose basically all the control over your life. You can end up in a care facility where you're eating soft food and you're playing soft music and you're playing bingos for kicks. And, you know, you're going to be living in a place where people – and someone's going to tell you whether you can smoke a cigar or anything and that kind of stuff. Likewise, if you don't plan your distribution of property and do some kind of planning there – you know, your financially challenged child may end up with your 1967 vintage Shelby Cobra driving it around, you know, at least until their creditors take it. So, I mean, these are could be bad things that happen. So, nonetheless, it's important you want to think about it. So that was number three. Number four, terminating a guardianship is very difficult. You know, it's kind of like if you get a big fast train going, it's really hard to slow it down. And you know, it's difficult because you've just been determined to need a guardian and conservator. So one thing, it's hard to go and get a lawyer to fight that after the fact because they've got this already determination in the court that says you are incapable. And that makes it awkward for them. And also, quite frankly, they're a little bit nervous because if you go in and it turns out that you – well, for one thing, you no longer control your money. So there's some question as to whether or not you get paid. And that's also an issue for, and I mean, that's not the only issue, but there's a whole lot of reasons why once you're in there, you know, it's kind of a little bit difficult, not a little bit, it's a lot difficult to get out. And, you know, the California, Hotel California, you know, you check in, you can't check out, that kind of thing. So anyway, and number five, you can't take it with you. And I mean, that's maybe an underlying principle.
That's going to disappoint a lot of people.
Well, yeah, it is. I mean, you can. Well, I don't know. I suppose it's not such a bad thing. I mean, you're not supposed to need anything after that, right?
That's right.
I guess. What we're told.
So, anyway, well, so let's just talk about briefly about what some of this stuff is. All of these things, guardianships, conservatorships, and probate are all court proceedings. And they all do more or less the same thing. They appoint someone else to take care of your property or to take care of you, as the case may be. And they're expensive, they're time-consuming, and they're open to public scrutiny, and they can be very embarrassing for some people. And importantly, they also tend to, I don't know, fan the flames of family discontent. And it's likely to have a lot of stuff going on there. So anyway, we've got to take a break really soon. So I want to just give you my answers to, so what does a per person do to fix this? One, try to stay healthy. Two, get a living will or a trust. Three, do a durable power of attorney. Four, have a nomination of a guardian conservator prepared. Five, surround yourself with good people and carefully select your fiduciary. And number six, and most importantly, hug your lawyer.
Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Investing Simplified and Kevin Stege, the tax investigator.
When your legal rights and responsibilities are involved, you need attorneys you can trust. The attorneys at the Warren Allen Law Firm offer you solid legal advice and exceptional service. We practice in nearly all areas of law. We can help you with your legal needs, including wills, trusts, probate, contracts, real estate, construction, landlord rights, business, personal injury, divorce, bankruptcy, and civil litigation. The Warren Allen Law Firm has represented individuals and businesses for over three decades, and its nine attorneys have more than 200 years of combined experience practicing law. By combining experience and knowledge with individualized attention and prompt service, Warren Allen is the law firm to rely on when you are in need of legal representation. We are conveniently located at 850 Northeast 122nd Avenue near the I-205 and I-84 interchange. I'm Carl Jepson, partner with the Warren Allen Law Firm, and I invite you to contact us at 503-255-8795 or on the web at warrenallen.com.
We do Investing Simplified.
Hi, everybody. Chuck Price, the financial doctor here. If you're between ages 58 and 68, choosing Social Security benefits at the right time is one of the biggest financial decisions you'll ever make. You get one chance to get it right. After 12 months, there are no do-overs. 74% of Americans receive reduced benefits. Get your free report on 44 Social Security secrets at pfgwm.com. Social Security is often one of the largest and most mismanaged assets in your retirement income plan. Claiming benefits sounds easy. So is leaving up to $250,000 of your money with the government, or reducing your benefits up to 76% over your life expectancy. For this vital information, go online to pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified. We do Investing Simplified.
When you have questions about your health, you go to a doctor, right? But when it comes to your financial health, like what investments will give you the best return, why are you talking to your spouse's cousin Lou? You need Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Chuck Price knows investing is not a one-size-fits-all approach. It's about what's best for your financial health. Sure, investing can be complex, but like your medical doctor, Chuck Price makes the complex simple, so you understand exactly what you're doing and why you're doing it. Sign up for our free newsletter and see our free videos at AskTheFinancialDoctor.com or call 503-253-3000 and make an appointment for a free financial checkup. We'll give you the facts and our honest advice. Then make your own decision. Nothing against your spouse's cousin Lou, but we've been helping people for over 40 years.
We do investing simplified.
Chuck Price, the financial doctor. Call 503-253-3000.
Do you have a tax question? Here's your opportunity to ask the tax investigator, Kevin Stege, CPA and partner of the Baker Colson CPA firm. You can call Kevin at 503-417-7626. That's 503-417-7626. Now here's the CPA with the tax answers, CPA Kevin Stege.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified, and we've had lively discussion with Rodney, and of course, Carl's is always worth listening to. I always learn something when Carl's comments is on, and I'm going to do the same thing as Carl did, and that is just touch briefly on a phone call we got from last week. The answers that I had off the top of the cuff, I just was not satisfied with. And so I thought I'd give a very brief summary of some ways to save for college, typically for somebody else, in a tax-favored way. And there's not a ton of options out there. There's the usual, the 529 plan, which most people know, the qualified state tuition program, little bit of a tax benefit on your state income tax return if you're in Oregon. Not a huge incentive, but a few bucks there. But a couple other ways that you can have more of a tax advantage way of saving, maybe for your grandkids or even for your kids for that matter. One is there's should still consider double E bonds. U.S. savings bonds. You don't get a deduction, obviously, for buying those, but you get basically tax-free earnings on those, and especially if you take the interest out, and only if you take the interest out and use it for qualified higher education expenses. So there's an investment that you can make. Obviously, you want to have that as part of your complete investment plan, and that it needs to make sense, and that the interest rate's right, so on and so forth. But not a bad way. Another way that you can save for college that, and this is not just college, but elementary and secondary education. And most people don't know this, but there's an education savings account. You can put up to $2,000 per, I'm going to call them beneficiary because it just doesn't have to be your child. It's not a deductible contribution, but the earnings grow tax-free, and if you pull it out for elementary, secondary, or higher education expenses for that beneficiary, they can be tax-free. And so kind of what I'm getting at is if you can't make a deductible contribution to get current tax savings, at least get a chunk of earnings tax-free, earning tax-free if the proceeds are pulled out for educational costs. And so that's really what it comes down to is kind of angling for that. And I do want to talk about education savings accounts a little bit more further because we don't see a lot of people using them. But boy, oh boy, if you're sending kids to private school or, some other school where you're having to pay out some money, and this isn't college, this is elementary and high school, then there's a benefit out there, and a lot of people don't take advantage of that. But lastly, I do want to touch on using the Roth as best you can, and you do have to fit within the rules of the Roth, where the person who is getting the Roth contribution has to have compensation in some form. But often we have clients that have small businesses and they can pay their kids a nominal salary or wage for some work done to give them that compensation to get some money into the Roth. So if you're a grandparent, your child has a business and you have a grandkid, you know, don't pay them compensation if they're 1 year old. That's a little, that probably just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Although you could probably, I don't think there's necessarily a rule against that, but I just don't think it looks good if they can't actually be doing some work for you. Well, maybe they're a poster child. Maybe
they're poster children. Of course they are.
Exactly.
They're little precious.
That's exactly right. Modeling. Modeling for that, those promo posters you're putting.
You could have them do an ad for you.
That's right. Yeah. And you do hear the little kids on the radio. I got a few in my mind, the jingles for local businesses, the cute little voice and stuff. So, absolutely, you can get them some compensation. Once they have compensation, then somebody can contribute into their Roth, and then they're allowed to pull out earnings for higher ed purposes before age 59 and a half, not subject to the 10% penalty. So that is what you're angling for. And a Roth is just a really great thing because the principal can always be pulled out at any time. Another thing you can do is contribute to your own Roth account if you're still working and you want to save for a grandchild, because you're still making tax-free earnings. Conceivably, you're going to be over 59 when you're going to be wanting to pay for your grandkids' education, and you just take your Roth principal back out and pay directly to the educational institution.
You know, Kevin, the one thing that people need to be aware of is if you set up a Roth in that child's name and you pay them a salary and you put the money in that Roth every year, when they get of legal age, it's their Roth, and they can do with the money whatever they want to do with it.
Is that a problem?
It could be. It could be a brand new car instead of a college education.
There's nothing wrong with a Trans Am. That's back in the 80s. That's exactly right, Chuck. And that is an issue there. You are making a gift to them and you're losing control of the funds. So real briefly, that is kind of in a nutshell some of the savings that tax savings, of course, along the same lines as a qualified state tuition program and all the pluses and minuses there. So that is the Tax Investigator today. I hope that's a little more of a thorough answer to our call last week. And if you have a specific idea or a thought, definitely give us a call and we'll address it.
You know, Kevin, right in what you're talking about, we were discussing this where people back in the old days used to set up uniform gift to minors. And I can remember a client that we had one time actually in Vancouver, and they had set this up for their grandchild, and their grandchild got 18, and they had a substantial amount of money, more than enough in there that could have paid for their college. And they decided to get married and buy a brand new car, and that money was gone, and he never went to school. So, you got to be careful in your planning what you really want to have done, because sometimes the person you're doing the planning for has a totally different idea what to do with the money than what you laid out the plan to do.
That's exactly right. And that's where an education savings account would be more beneficial, because that money is actually in trust, can only be used for that beneficiary's education, or because you're the trustee of it, and it doesn't require a separate tax return. But then you can actually designate a different beneficiary in your family, close family, mm-hmm. so on and so forth.
And I got to tell you, Oregon and Washington has a GET program that is a great program for kids, because you're basically prepaying for college at today's prices. And of course, we all know college is one of the fastest growing prices of things to pay for. And Oregon's program, 529 plan, is one of the better ones too than private plans. And so there are places to do it within the state of Oregon and Washington. You can do it and really do a good plan.
That's exactly right. So if you have any further questions on that, give me a call during the week, 503-666-5569, or you can reach me at baker-colson.com.
And Carl?
503-255-8795 or warrenallen.com.
And you can reach me at 503-253-3000 or 877-50-PRICE. And we're at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, and on the web at pfgwm.com or askthefinancialdoctor.com. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week with Investing Simplified.
Price Financial Group, wealth management. Price Financial Group, wealth management. We do investing simplified.